Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
All right, back here on the Investor Coaching Show, Paul Winkler, Ira Work, talking money and investing, and lots of news in this past week. We had all kinds of interest rate news, all kinds of inflation news, all kinds of concerns about Iran and Israel and Russia, and talk about is Ukraine losing the war? Is Israel losing the war? Because they're basically leaving this big gap. You know, they go in there and there's all kinds of bombing and destruction over there. And are they losing the war? But there's all kinds of concerns about everything. And people, we always have something to worry about. I saw a shirt that I really liked, Ira. It was something to the effect that study history. People have always done dumb things. That's a paraphrase. I really like the shirt.
Well, if you study history, Israel really, since forming in 48, has not lost the war.
But people have always done dumb things. There's all kinds of stuff how do we respond? What do we do? And, it's just like, oh, gosh. And my point being that so often people say to me, they'll say, well, Paul, this has never happened before. This is different this time. And my point is always, it's always something different. There's nothing new under the sun. Solomon had it right, a long time ago.
I was just going to say that. Exactly that. A very wise man said, there's nothing new under the sun.
That's exactly right. So if I've been checking out some of the news media, and I want to play something for you because it was interesting regarding some of the inflation data coming out and some of the commentary on CNBC. Somebody just hit a couple things here.
The number that I'm most interested in, which is apropos of the discussion we're having about retailers, how well the consumer's doing, but also what's happening with import prices and input costs to the for retailers, is non-petroleum import prices, which actually were flat on the month, unchanged year over year. Sorry.
So I think that's important right there. When we talk about inflation and some of the issues that are going on right now, the import prices, the data came in this week flat, that there was not inflation coming from that area. So he'll go on. Let me just continue here because he goes on to explain a little bit further.
Down unchanged year over year, and down 0.2%. So the issue is that at least when it comes to the importation of inflation, it's not happened. The inflation we have appears to be here domestically.
So it's here in the United States is basically where we're dealing with inflation. So as an investor, we've got to think about, well, that may be really boding well for what? The possibility of imports or companies outside the United States bringing things over to the United States, not dealing with inflation as much as we're dealing with here in the States. And when we talk about investing here on the show, one of the things that we point out all the time is diversification, not just in the U.S., but internationally, mm-hmm. Right?
And we're probably a little bit heavier on the international side than most firms.
Oh, no question. No question about it. And you go, well, why? Because when we say that heavier, you look typically at an investment portfolio by big mutual fund companies, investment firms. They will typically be mainly U.S. because of familiarity. If you look at an international investor, I remember Gene Fama, University of Chicago professor that won the Nobel Prize, he talked in economics on investing. He talked about how quite often you'll have an ethnocentricity. in other areas around the world for their country, just as we have it here. In other words, we think we're the only game in town, and we tend to focus that way. Well, so do other countries. If you're a Japanese investor, he said, you're going to mainly be thinking about big Japanese companies because you're familiar with them. If you're an Australian investor, you're thinking about those types of things. So, you know, that is number one right here, is you're looking at the desire to be mainly in your own country can backfire, especially when information like this comes out. Now, who knows where it's going to lead? But this is a point I want to make here. And let me continue this.
And what could be happening, what is most likely happening, is the inflation is in the service sector and being driven, I think, especially by labor input costs. You had those rises, by the way, in minimum wages. That could be showing up in some of the inflation that we're seeing being passed along.
So you think about that. That's not something that, you know, politically, I think that some people would like to be seeing or hearing. Because you look at it and go, well, why are labor costs going up? Because it's another example of how unintended consequences of legislation can create issues. All of a sudden, you have a very high minimum wage, and now you have a higher input cost, which is labor costs, which drive up the cost of goods and services, which is inflation.
Well, I don't know if you saw the article earlier this week following the minimum wage increase from $15 to $20 an hour in California.
Mm-hmm.
There were people who showed up for work with a sign on the door that said closed. That's it. The businesses just shut down.
Yeah, I did not see that. Uh-huh. That's interesting.
Yeah, so again, the consequences of these type of decisions can be horrible for the portfolio. But, you know, you said something, Paul, about a lot of the fund companies building these portfolios.
And the CFO,
whoops,
Jeremy
sorry about that. I didn't mean to start that.
That's
go
right.
Ahead.
A lot of these companies building the mutual fund companies building the portfolios, and, you know, when we look at target date funds, for example, that are more heavily weighted in U.S., I don't necessarily think it's only familiarity. I think that fund companies recognize that most investors don't know what they're looking at. And as a result of that, they build the portfolios intentionally because the average investor, I think, is just really focused on the return of the S&P.
Well, that would be familiarity because they're big U.S. companies.
I understand that. But they're not looking at what's in the portfolio. They're looking at the return of the portfolio.
But what would you make of IRA? I mean, you make a good point, but what would you make of the fact that from 2000 through 2012, the S&P had no return and those portfolios were still concentrated in that area?
Because if I'm hearing news, right, then Neil Cavuto gets on and talks about the market being down, the market being down.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at my statement and I see my statement is down.
Yeah.
I've expected that.
Well, it's familiarity.
Not familiarity in the way they're invested. So take, for example, the way we invest. Our clients from 2000 to 2010, 11, 12 didn't suffer the way most market participants suffered, because of the education that we do of the practice.
If that was suffering, I'd be happy. I mean, that'd be like, I mean, no. I mean, we talk about that and we go, you know, there were sections of the portfolio that went up 300-400% over that period of time.
But that's what I'm saying. So our investors, our clients, didn't necessarily suffer the way most of the, we'll say, Main Street America suffered, because of the fact that we took the time to educate the importance of diversification, showed and explained and actually show them how they can look at their portfolio and statements and see what's going up, what's going down, so they don't have to get caught up in what I like to refer to as the noise from the talking heads on radio and television.
And mainly the idea is just looking different. It is the whole thing. And that's what it's such a challenge for investors, is looking different than the crowd. You know, so you basically have herding bias. We all like to look alike, and it's not necessarily a good thing. So, and I think that is a big deal for investors, is helping get them get over that. because the reality of it is a diversified truly diversified portfolio. I hate to say truly diversified, because you can be diversified in an asset class. You could be a diversified tech investor and own every tech stock and still go down 80%. It's an overused term. So often people say, yeah, you're diversified. No, you're not. Not by the definition, the academic definition of it. But yeah, I think that is absolutely the case. Now, I think another thing that is worth just discussing here.
All right.
Is what are we talking about with inflation? We're talking about, you know, the issues of inflation. We're concerned, and this is what people are talking about, what they've been talking about all week long, is interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
What are interest rates going to do, Ira? And why is that important?
They're going to fluctuate.
Oh, that was a wimpy response. No, you're right. They really, you are absolutely right. That is our knee-jerk response is, we don't know. But yet in the investment industry, it is almost impossible to get somebody to just say, I don't know what's going to happen. Like if you look at one of the biggest asset management firms out there, JP Morgan,
mm-hmm.
they're going to have an opinion on what's going to happen with interest rates. Well, you know, this was also on CNBC.
Yeah, and the CFO, Jeremy Barnum, saying that forecasting net interest income has become, in his words, meaningfully harder than at any other time. Interesting thing. I guess they're not much smarter than the rest of us when it comes to trying to figure out what the Fed's going to do next.
Isn't that just funny? They're not much smarter than the rest of us. Number one. Number two, the point being made here is what the Fed's going to do, as if that was the issue with interest rates. What did we see with interest rates before the Fed? The Fed hasn't done anything. The Fed hasn't made any changes in the past week. And yet interest rates have gone up significantly. It didn't take the Fed to do it. It was the marketplace that did it. And yet we often think that that's what the deal is.
The reality is the Fed hasn't done anything now in 3.5 months.
Yet that's who we give all the credit for as far as changing interest rates.
No,
and yet you see that, I mean, literally when you look at the markets, that's what has been driving things.
Right. And if you talk to professional bond traders, as I have, they will tell you that the Fed has nothing to do with interest rates, that we are the ones who control interest rates. That's what the bond traders will tell you.
And not that it's a small group of bond traders, but it is they are the ones that are the go-betweens between the people wanting to buy bonds and the people selling the bonds.
Right.
So therefore, they are the in-between, and they see this activity. They see what is driving interest rates, and that is what it is. It is the marketplace. The marketplace is huge for bonds. It's much bigger than the stock market. So the reality of it is that's what's driving interest rates. The Fed, you know, they talk about things. They've got information. I've often said that they have information about what's going on in the economy, and they can influence things, the short-term interest rates, but recognize that too often the media focuses on the wrong thing, and as a result, quite often focuses the investment managers on things that really aren't that important when it gets down to it. And that's really the issue at hand here, is where so many people get information about investing are people that are kind of following the same book, you know, when it gets down to it. Thanks for tuning in to the Investor Coaching Podcast. Now, you may be one of these people that's been listening and realizing, wow, investing, there's a lot more to it than meets the eye, and financial planning, tax laws constantly changing, and recognizing that maybe you might need some help in this area, but you don't want just anybody to help you out. So we have 10 offices in the Middle Tennessee area, and everything we do is fee only. We align our interests with your interests. So you can get an initial 15-minute phone call with any one of our offices just by going to paulwinkler.com/call. That's it. Every one of the offices is run by somebody with 20 plus years experience. They're all degree planners. They all have academic backgrounds in investing, and you can get the help that you need. So if you want to set up a complimentary phone consultation, just go to paulwinkler.com/call.
and we look forward to seeing you soon.
All right, back here on the Investor Coaching Show, Paul Winkler along with Ira Work, talking money and investing. Okay, so I got a question.
Go ahead.
By the way, you can ask questions on the website. Even you too, Ira, you want to ask questions? That'd be pretty pointless. PaulWinkler.com/question. The other thing is just go on the website, PaulWinkler.com, and you can find where you can ask questions right there. And, you know, so it's something that you can put in there and go, hey, I wonder about this. And sometimes I forget to mention that you can ask questions here. But by all means, do that. Ask it right there. Let's see, where is it? I think, yeah, it's content. You hit the content button. Hit the content button, and it says click here to ask Paul a question for the show. That's where you go. Okay. So a question came in. It was curious as to why, Paul, you seem to lump Bitcoin in with crypto like they're all the same. They're not all the same. They're all the same as far as something that I wouldn't invest in. That's the way I would put that. I wouldn't invest in it because it would be something that would not be an investment by definition from an academic standpoint, that there is no cost of capital. And those of you that don't know what cost of capital is, it's like this idea. Let's say if I told you that there was an investment that paid $4,500 a year and the investment was treasury bonds, which are paying about 4.5% right now. They've gone up to about 4.5% approximately. If it paid $4,500 a year, that would tell me that that investment would be worth about $100,000, that I would be willing to pay you $100,000 for that investment to take that off your hands, because then I will receive the $4,500. There is a cost to use my capital. And in treasury bonds right now, that's about 4.5%. Now, if I look at, let's say, value stocks, historically, sell for about 10 times earnings. So if I told you that there were a bunch of companies and there were value companies, as the example I like to use, and they had about $1 billion of earnings, I could tell you that they would be worth approximately, if it was a diversified value portfolio, worth about $10 billion. I could put a number on it. I know what it's worth because I know what the interest is in the first investment. I know what the earnings are in the second investment. That is cost of capital. Now, when it comes to crypto, there is no payment. Now, there have been people that have tried to make the point or make the case that Bitcoin was not a cryptocurrency, that it wasn't one. Let's look at the Merriam-Webster definition of cryptocurrency. Any form of currency that exists digitally that usually has no central issuing or regulating authority, but instead uses a decentralized system to record transactions and manage the issuance of new units. So basically you have, and then right here in the definition in Merriam-Webster, is virtual currency Bitcoin hit the mainstream. You know, so, you know, it just talks about when it hit the mainstream. So in essence, even Merriam-Webster defines it and throws that in cryptocurrency. Now, there are different types, and some of them are pretty dodgy, as some articles have actually talked about. And if we look around and we say, well, Bitcoin, you know, there was this one article, this may mislead people or may cause some people a little confusion. And the article was from Forbes, and it said, Bitcoin is not a crypto. Crypto, the SEC confirms, is what the article headline was. And I think just a sneaking suspicion, a lot of people read that headline and may have thought, well, Bitcoin is not a cryptocurrency. Yet if you go in, it actually talks about an SEC. They were relying on a precedent set by the Supreme Court in 1946. And they walked through that very specifically in this article. It was the Howey test. And they said that it holds that an investment contract amounts to a security if three conditions are met. There's an investment of money, number one. Number two, the investment is made in a common enterprise. And number three, there's an expectation that profits will be derived from the efforts of others. So, you know, they're pointing out that some people have thought that. But I like what the person writing the article says. Critically, none of that applies to Bitcoin. None of it. The world's most decentralized crypto with a market cap nearly equal to all the cryptos combined. And the point being, and it says, and the SEC knows it. And the point being there that there is nobody making a return or trying to increase the return. I mean, I guess you could say, Ira, back in the day when we used to receive faxes, you know, when you get like a penny stock and you get a fax, you need to buy this. You could say that the efforts of that person to try to get you to buy the penny stock was trying to give the investment more return, right?
Yeah, I did that.
through creating demand, but it wasn't a return due to cost of capital. It's a totally different deal.
No, but see, I wonder if there would be more people buying crypto or less people buying crypto if people went and said something to this effect. Paul, I've got this investment for you. Mm-hmm. The company, there's no location for a company. Mm-hmm. There's no product that the company has. Mm-hmm. There's no profit that's really expected. Mm-hmm. You could lose all your money. Mm-hmm. I think you should invest 100 grand.
And there is an incentive for people to mine more of it to increase the supply of it. And anytime you increase the supply of something, what do?
You devalue that.
You can devalue it. Yeah, that's exactly right.
But my point being is, you know, with a stock or company, we can pretty much go to the company's headquarters. We know what their product is. Mm-hmm. We can see what their sales are. Mm-hmm. We can see if there are profits and losses.
That's
we
right.
can see who's running the company.
Right.
You know, when I'm talking to clients and introducing the cost of capital to them, the way that I do it is really very, very simple. As I ask them, do you have or at one point had a mortgage? Mm-hmm. And they said, yeah. And I said, why did you have a mortgage? Mm-hmm. Well, because we couldn't afford to just buy that $200,000 house. Mm-hmm. So the interest that you pay to borrow the bank's money is the cost of capital. It is what you're willing to pay for that money.
Yeah, it's so the cost you had to pay for the capital.
So it's no different than a company issuing a bond. They need $1 million to expand their business, so they issue a bond that pays 5%. To get your money, to use your money. That's cost of capital. Very simple.
Yeah, it is.
But cryptocurrency, as you said, there is no cost of capital there. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it's not an investment.
It goes up based on supply and demand.
Right, just like tulips.
You know, it's and gold, you know? You know, see gold, it can go up in value, and people think, oh, wow, it's a great investment. No, it went up in value because somebody was willing to pay more for it than the previous person paid for it.
Right.
And it went up in value, but that doesn't mean it can't come down just as rapidly when that demand dries up. Mm-hmm. And that is the problem. So, you know, are they all the same? No, I wouldn't lump it in and say it's all the same, but it is a crypto. Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one. Advisory services offered through Paul Winkler, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor. The opinions voiced and information provided in this material are for general informational purposes only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what investments are appropriate for you, please consult with a financial advisor. Paul Winkler, Inc. does not provide tax or legal advice. Please consult your tax or legal advisor regarding your particular situation.